we are holding on Tesvav on the Tesvav on the day, 10 lines from the bottom by the two dots. We looked before, we had a brisa which we're in the middle of analyzing about various takanos that were made by various members of the Zurgas. We said that Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yechanan declared Tuma, among other things, on glass kalim. Then we had Shimon and Shatach, which we're going to deal with later, about metal kalim, and we had Hillel and Shammai. So we're still in the middle of discussing. We discussed yesterday about what the story was with the Tuma about Eretz Ha'amim, that originally Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yechanan declared Tuma on Eretz Ha'amim, and we discussed the exact story, what the various sages were in that takan. And now we're up to glass kalim. Place chochis nighttime of gozer b'ur rabban and truma. Why did the chachamim declare truma on glass kalim? Now you have minat Torah. There are seven materials that if kalim are made from them are makabel truma. In minat Torah you have seven materials. You have It's actually a Rambam Shlosha Prakim these days, but the Minat Torah, you have like this clothes, sackcloth, like a coarse kind of cloth made from goat hair or whatever. So Minat Torah, you have seven kinds of kalim that are able to become tameh: clothes, sackcloth, which is a coarse kind of cloth, leather, bone, metal, wood, and earthenware. So we're saying that now that Rabbanan added an eighth kind, glass. So the question is why?
What's glass exactly?
What is glass? Glass.
Oh, glass. Okay.
The answer is Amar Rav Yechanan. Amar Rish Lakish Hoyle Tchilas Briyatin Menachel. So Rav Yechanan says over here, Rav Yechanan says in the name of Rish Lakish, that's probably not the right girsa because Rish Lakish is Rav Yechanan's Talmud. Rav Yechanan is not going to say something in his name, but whatever it is, Rav Yechanan said, the reason is because glass is made out of sand, and therefore, in that sense, it's similar to earthenware, which is made out of clay. Therefore, the Rabbanon decided that glass should have the same status as clay cheres, because they're both made out of earth. So earthenware and glass are made out of different kinds of earth, but nevertheless, they both are made from earth, and therefore, the Chachamim found it appropriate to make them the same. So the question is, Elamayasa, by that logic, if we're saying that there's metabol truma on the basis that they're similar to earthenware, then they should have the dinim of earthenware. Loita helahem tara b'mikveh. The din should be that a glassware becomes tamei, you can't dip it in a mikveh to make it tohar, which is the case with clay cheres. The rule with clay cheres is if they become tamei, the only thing you can do is break them. So shouldn't we say the same thing is true as far as glass then, if we're going to say that glass has the same status as clay cheres? In that case, why do we learn in a Mishnah in Mikvahs that Elu Choytetim B'Kelim? The Mishnah starts listing off over there the following things that are considered a chatzitza on a keli as far as toveling it. The general rule is Midaraisa, something is considered a chatzitza on a person or on a keli only if it covers the majority of the keli and the person is masked on it and wants and doesn't want to have it there. If it's a minority of the keli or the person, or even if it's a majority but the person doesn't mind it being there, that's not a chatzitza. Midrabanan, we say that if it's one or the other, if it's the majority or if it's a minority and he's masked, then it's a chatzitza. So the Mishnah starts listing over there what kind of things are and aren't considered a chatzitza. And the Mishnah says that when it comes to glass kalim, then zephis, which is tar or pitch, and myrrh, which is this is one of the ingredients of the tertus, those are a chatzitza. Now Rashi explains that it means only those things by glassware. The reason is Rashi says glass is smooth. So most other kinds of dirt that you find on glass is not going to be masked on because it's going to fall off very easily because the glass is smooth. Only when it comes to these things, the tar and myrrh, which are very, very sticky, only then would a person be masked on them and say that they would find it objectionable and they would remove it and therefore it's considered a chitza. So we see, in other words, but we see the very fact that the Ritva has a bit of a different explanation. He says that everything would be a chatzitza in glass. The chiddush is, with these two, we're saying that these are a chatzitza, only by glass as opposed to other things, as opposed to other kinds of kalim. If you have tar or mur on them, then a person's not going to be makhtin so much. Anyway, the point is the Mishnah mentioned chatzitza in connection with glass kalim, implying therefore that you have to be able to toivel them, because otherwise, why do we care about chatzitza? Tosfos says we can't be talking about when you buy a new keli from a goy, and we know that you have to toivel kalim that you buy from a goy, so maybe we'd say we're talking about over here also. Tosfos says can't be, because the Mishnah then continues about other kinds of kalim that what is and isn't a chatzitza, and it mentions over there kalim that have nothing to do with preparing food. So obviously we're not talking about toveling kalim for food, which is the only time, which is when you have to tovel kalim, not for tumah batara, but rather we're talking about when you're toveling for actual tumah batara, and we see that glass is included, and we see that it's mentioning what is and isn't a chatzitza with glass. So again, if you're going to say that glass is like earthenware, then why should you be able to table it?
Is glass what?
If glass is like earthenware, is like clay cheris, then just if the Chachamim made glass to be metabol tumah because it's like earthenware, because they're both made from something from the ground, then the same rule should apply to earthenware as to glass. You can't tovel earthenware to make it tumah. Once it becomes tumah, you have to break it. The same thing should apply to glass. And yet we see from this Mishnah that we just quoted that you can tovel glass. The answer is, yes, but the case the Mishnah is talking about over there in Mitzvot is where the glass keli developed a hole, and the hitif was soich an avo. And then what the person did is he dripped some lead into there to fill up the hole. So, and what does that make a difference? That Mishnah would be specifically, according to the mayor, who says in general that you go according to what makes the keli last, what makes it stand. Titania, as in fact we learn in a braisa, klois chokas shenik will be hit for sechan aver. Exactly that case. If you have glass kalim that got a hole and you put lead into them to fill up the hole, Amr of Shimon Gamliel, said of Shimon Gamliel, tells us you should know there's a machlokas. The mayor matam the chum matarim. The mayor says that it's able to be metabol tumah, and the chum says it's not. Now the question is, who cares whether you go, so okay, the point is, in other words, the mayor is going according to the plug, and the plug is made out of lead, which is a metal, where the Chachamim are saying that not. So therefore, so Rashi explains over here, what it means is like this. The mayor is going to say, therefore, in terms of, it, once it got a hole, if we're going to say that glass is like clay cheres, there's a rule with clay cheres that says that once they broke, then they're not mekabel tumah anymore, even if you fix them. So therefore, so the Chachamim would say, therefore, that this glass is considered like clay cheres. Therefore, it's not mekabel tumah anymore once it had a hole. You filled up the hole and now the keli is usable again. The Chachamim say, we don't care. Whereas Reb Meir says, you go according to the material that you use to close up the hole. In this case, you use lead. Lead is a metal. Therefore, it's considered a metal keli. Therefore, it's considered a metal keli, and therefore, tumah v'tahara applies there. Elsewhere, Rashi, there's a different place in Rosh Hashanah where it also brings this Gemara, and Rashi has a different explanation of what over there of what exactly the Meir and the Chachamim are saying. What it is we're going to learn soon in the Gemara about a concept with metal kalim called Tumah Yishana. That again, the Drabbanan, we're going to say like this: Midaraisa, any keli that became tumah and you broke it, is that's it. The old tumah went away, and now, okay, maybe if you fix it, it's going to be mekabel tumah in the future, maybe not, depends on the type of keli, but whatever it is, you don't have that the old tumah comes back after it's fixed. Midrabbanan, as we're going to learn soon, when it comes to metal kalim, we do say that. It's called tumah yishana. So Rashi, in a different place, in Rosh Hashanah, explains that that's the machlokas of the mayor and the Chachamim. The Chachamim hold, they both agree that it's mekabel tumah from then on, because after all, it's a usable keli. The machlokas is, does it go back to tumah yishana? The Chachamim say no, because it's glass, and glass doesn't have tumah yishana. And the mayor holds, you go according to the plug, and the plug is metal, and therefore tumah yishana comes back. Then Tosfos mentions over here a couple of other possibilities. Is it maybe if we say that it's like clay cheres, and again, even the fact that you fixed it wouldn't matter, and it wouldn't be mekabel tumah anymore. And then Tosfos says over here that maybe it's just maybe they both agree that it's mekabel tumah, but the question is it mekabel tumah on a deraisa level or only a derabanan level? Okay, anyway, the point of the matter is that we see. So therefore, what we can say is that Mishnah that we found, where we see that glass can be toveled, is not talking about the original glass keli. We might well say that glass is not able to be toveled and made tahor, because it would be just like earthenware. But when it was plugged up with a piece of lead, with a bit of lead, then the mayor is going to say that it has different dinim, and therefore you're able to table it. Okay. Finally,
where does he get it from, Reb Meir?
He holds in general in this and in other places. He says that you go according to the Ma'amid. So that's his rule in halacha, that you have something that causes something else to be functional again. So you go according to that thing that makes it functional. So over here, that would be the case. The cup or whatever it is non-functional with a hole, but now it's functional again with the lead plug. Therefore, it may as well you go according to that. Okay. So the question is,
according to that logic, if you put another piece of glass in the hole, then it would also contain tumor, wouldn't it?
No, because then you would go according to the original glass. Well, then it depends on the various explanations that we're talking about over here. Is it that now it's a functional failure again? Is it that now it's not considered like Kleiseres anymore, where the rule is that Kleiseres, once they break, are not able to be Makabal Toma, even if you fix them, et cetera. Right. I mean, practically speaking, it would be hard to put in new glass to fill up a hole, but yeah. I suppose, yeah, if you had glass in there, then you'd have then it would be a different machlokas. Okay. Anyway, Elameasa, so by that logic, the Gemara asks, if you're going to tell me that glass kalim are considered like clay cheres, loyli tamu migabon, then the rule should be, just like clay cheres, they can't become tome if tumah touches them on the outside, because we know that's one of the differences between clay cheres and most kinds of kalim, is that the most kinds of kalim become tame when tumah touches any part of them, whether the inside or the outside. Clay cheres are unique in that they don't become tame if tumah touches the outside of them, only if it touches the inside or even if it goes into their airspace. So like this, we should say that glass kalim should not become tame. They should be like clay cheres, and they shouldn't become tame if tumah touches them from the outside. Alamatnan, in that case, why do we learn in a Mishnah in kalim, clay cheres or clay neser tumah and shava, clay cheres, earthenware, and clay neser, which is kalim made out of, Rashi just said, some kind of white earth. There's a couple of different explanations among Rishonim what exactly neser is, but whatever. It's some kind of, the Rambam, for example, explains that it's some kind of earth where it's possible to, the Rambam explains, regular clay, you expose it to heat, then it becomes clay cheres, it becomes earthenware, it becomes usable now to store things long term. You have a certain kind of earth that Amman describes, some kind of chalky earth or something, where if you expose it to too much heat, it'll just break down and melt. But if you expose it to a little bit of heat, experts know how to make kalim out of it, and at moderate heat, those kalim won't last a long time, but they'll last long enough to be usable for certain purposes, and yeah, that's clay nester. So whatever, there's a couple of different explanations among Rishonim what exactly clay nester is. For our purposes, that's not so important. The point is, it does have the din of clay cheres. The Mishnah continues, tumas and shava, they both have the same dinim as far as tumah. Mitamin or metamin me avirayin, they're able to become tome if tumah goes into their airspace. They're able to be metame other food that is in their airspace, even if the tumah didn't touch them. Mitamin me achirayin, they're able to become tome from their backside, which means, so now what does that mean? Metamin me achirayin, Rashi explains like this. We know, for example, you have, let's say, think of a becher, think of a kiddush cup with a stem. You often have at the bottom of the stem, at the base is hollow. So that kind of hollow is what Rashi explains over here is what's called acherehen. So suppose you have an earthenware keli that's made like that with a hollow space on the underside of it, then the thing would be able to become tome if tuma went into there, because that would be considered like the airspace of it, even though it's not the main receptacle of that keli. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about the pros and cons of that. Maybe not, because after all, that's not the main kibul of it. It isn't after all the main receptacle of it. So Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. One of them being that if tuma does go in there, maybe it's only metame that part of the keli, the drabonon. Maybe we say d'oraisa and nothing happens, but the drabonon, we would say that section of the keli becomes tame. Or another possibility, another possibility Tosfos discusses is that maybe what it means is that that if the inside of a keli became tame in the regular way, then the whole thing becomes tame, including that. But if not, then not. Okay, whatever it is, anyway, the Ein Mitamin Migabehen continues the Mishnah, though, earthenware kalim and kalim of Neser do not become tame from their outside, meaning if Truma touches the outside of the kalim, let's say you have, for example, a cup, and Truma touches the outside of the cup, nothing happens. Ushvirosen Taharosen, and another rule that applies to both Klei Teres and Klei Neser is that if they break, then the Truma goes away, breaking them removes the Truma. The point being, by quoting that Mishnah, all that is Klei Neser or Klei Teres to the Tumos and Shabbat. So we see that all these rules only apply to Klei Neser and Klei Teres, Alamidi Achrin Eloi, but not to glass Kalim. Now, if you're telling me that glass is considered like Klei Teres, then the rule should be that if that Tumah touches the outside of a glass keli, it should be like Klei Teres, they don't become Tumah. And yet the Mishnah is mentioning that that's true only of Teres and Neser, implying that a glass keli, if Tumah touches the outside of it, it will become Tumah.
If you break the glass thing and then put it back together, it's the tumor away.
Then the tumor, right. Mm-hmm. Yes, so indeed, if you were to break a glass keli and then reassemble it, indeed the tumor, the old tumor would go away. It can be macabre tumor thereafter, at least maybe according to what we're arguing now. But it's not going to, the old tumor is not going to come back, right? The Gemara is going to mention soon that only when it comes to metal do we have that concept called tumor yeshana, that the old tumor comes back. Anyway, yeah, so. So again, the point is, if you're going to tell me that glass is like Klei Teres, then the rules of Klei Teres should apply to it, namely that it doesn't become Tomei from Tumah touching the outside of it. So therefore, and yet we find that with glass it is. So why is that? Amri, so they answer, Kiven dekin ishtabru yesh lehem sakana. The reason is like this, because it's true. In one way, glass is like Klei Teres, because it's made from something from the earth. On the other hand, the fact is glass is different than Klei Teres in another way, namely that if glass breaks, you're able to fix it. Because, after all, glass is made from sand. So therefore, what happens if glass breaks? In principle, you can grind it down into sand again, and then you can make new glass out of it. As opposed to Klei Teres, it doesn't work that way. Once you fired up the clay, even if you break it down, you're not going to be able to make a new Klei Teres out of the pieces. So therefore, Shadinu, Kiklei Matkas, therefore the Chachamim decided that at least for certain purposes, glass should be considered like metal kalim. So now we're saying that glass is not completely like Klei Teres. It is in a way like them. But on the other hand, in a way, it's like glass kalim. You actually have an interesting point that the Rishonim over here disagree on the question. Well, we haven't finished the discussion yet, what exactly is the dinim of glass kalim, but there is actually a bit of discussion among Rishonim. Do we say then that glass kalim are like Klei Teres in that they're able to be mekabel tumah or transmit tumah through their airspace? Now, we know with Klei Teres it's like that. If a source of tumah goes into a Klei Teres, even if it doesn't actually touch the walls of it, just the fact that it's inside the airspace of the Klei Teres is enough to be mekabel it. Does the same thing apply to glass kalim, if we're saying that to a certain extent like they're like Klei Teres? Tosfos over here, in fact, says yes. On the other hand, many of the other Rishonim, including the Rambam and the Ravid, disagree and say on various grounds that not. Either because the Rambam writes, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that glass kalim, the inside and the outside, are both visible together because it's see-through. Therefore, the Chachamim didn't want to make a distinction between the inside and the outside. The Ravid explains that if you were to say that they're metame from their airspace, then it comes out that earthenware is going to be more stringent than any other kind of keli, because there's no other kind of keli where you have both, that either where Tumah touches it or goes into its airspace, should be makabel Tumah. You don't have that. Therefore, the Ravid says the Chacham didn't want to impose that. But according to Tosfos over here, again, the Gemara would be saying that, yes, in fact, it would become metame from its airspace as well. And there's also an interesting idea that Rabbi Akiva Eger wants to say that if there still should be a difference how the glass kalim became tummy. If we say that it can become tummy from the outside, like metal kalim, then we should say it should be able to be dipped in a mikveh like metal kalim. Only if we're saying that if the tumah comes from the inside, which then it's like klei cheres, then we would say it would be like klei cheres and it can't be tovel. Anyway, so far what we're saying is that glass kalim are considered to a certain extent like metal kalim because they are like metal in that if they break, you're able to reform them, unlike clay cheres. The Gemara, by the way, a different place in Chagiga that mentions for that reason that a Talmud Chacham is like a glass kalim. You have a comparison in one place in Tanakh between glass and Torah. So it's just like we're saying over here, that glass is, once it's broken, that's not the end of it. You're able to reform it. You're able to remake it the same way. Talmud Chacham, who did Averis, is able to do tshuva, and his tshuva will be reaccepted, and his Torah, and the Torah that he had before will still be treasured by Hashem, because after all, he did do tshuva. No, it's not so obvious. You would think that maybe that he did have, he learned Torah, he did have Averis, maybe now.
Sure.
But maybe you would think that maybe the Torah that he learned up until now is that it's gone, it's rejected. But no, we're saying that it's still yesh lehem takan. Okay, fine. So the question is, the Gemara asks, Elamei Ata, okay, by that logic, if you're telling me that glass is like metal kalim, yachzu l'truma osan yeshana to clay matzvahs, then we should go back. They should go back to the original truma, which on Omer Beis we're going to talk about this concept of truma yeshana, of old truma reverting back to the keli even after it was broken and fixed. We should say, just like you have that din when it comes to metal kalim, ditznan, as in fact we learn in another Mishnah in kalim, clay matchas, shukehen and mekablehen tmein, when it comes to metal kalim, they're mekabel tumah, whether they're flat or whether they have a receptacle, unlike wood and various other kinds of kalim, which are mekabel tumah only if they have a receptacle. For example, a flat wooden board wouldn't be mekabel tumah, but when it comes to metal, it's not like that. Flat metal kalim are mekabel tumah. So whether it's flat or whether it has a receptacle, they're tummy. Nishbu, continues the Mishnah, if a metal kalim that became tummy broke, taharu, then the tumah goes away, because now it's not a kalim. But the Mishnah continues, chazav asimahem kalim, if you took the broken piece of the metal and made a new kalim out of it, chazru l'tumasam yeshana, they go back to their original tumah, as we'll see soon on other days, why the Chachamim did that. But the point is, we do have that din when it comes to metal kalim, that even after they're broken and remade, the original tumah still comes back. The ilu gabi klei chukistan. Now, when it comes to glass kalim, it's not like that. Because the Mishnah says over there, the Mishnah says, also in kalim, klei eitz or klei ur, a wooden kalim, or kalim made out of leather or skin, or klei esem, or ones made out of bones of animals or whatever, or klei chukis, or glass kalim, the rules for them are different. Shutehen tahorin, flat ones are not makabel tumah. Rashi brings over here because there's a hekesh and a pasuk between wood and leather on the one hand and a sack on the other hand. A sack has a kli kibble. A sack obviously has a receptacle. You can hold things inside it. Therefore, we learn from a hekesh from that all these other kalim, the same rule applies. They have to have a receptacle in order to be makabel tumah. So a flat wooden board, for example, or a keli made out of leather, for example, that's flat, would not be makabel tumah. With the exception, by the way, of you do have, now there is an exception to that. You have what's called tumas midras. You have the tumah that's caused by a zav lying or sitting or leaning or whatever on them. That's a special case where you have that certain kinds of things that otherwise wouldn't be makabel tumah are able to be makabel tumah because with tumas midras. But we're not dealing with that over here. We're mainly dealing with tumas sheres or whatever. So shukei and taharim. So all these four kinds of things: wood, leather, bone, or glass. Shukei and taharim. Again, flat ones are not makabel tumah. Or makablehen tmehin. But if they have a receptacle, if they're able to contain something within them, then they are makabel tumah. Nishburu taharu. If they break. Then they're tahor, the tumah goes away. Chazav asimahem kalim, and suppose a person did go and make a keli out of the remnants of one of these things, mekablan tumah mikanu laba, then they're only mekabel tumah from now on, meaning mikanu laba eim lamakrei aloi. So only from now on, not retroactively. We don't say that the old tumah that was on them before comes back after they're fixed, unlike metal kalim. So if you're telling me that glass is like metal, because when you break glass, you can remake it. Then it should have the din of a metal keli. You should say that the same rule should apply, and if it breaks and you fix it, then the old tumah should come back. The answer is no. The reason why we don't do that is like this. We just said the whole concept that glass kalim can even become tameh is drabon. We said that Yosef ben Yehuda and Yosef ben Yochanan made a takana that glass kalim are able to be makabel tumah. So that whole concept is drabon. The tumah yeshana drabon. Also, this concept of tumah yeshana, that the tumah of the kalim comes back to it, is also drabon. Therefore, the tumah da'araisa achisu barabanan tumah, therefore when it comes to a tumah that exists on a da'araisa level, then the chachamim applied that tumah, achisu literally means they made it descend. So the chachamim made the tumah descend onto clay tzuchus, onto glass kalim. The tumah da'rabanan, why achisu da'rabanan tumah? But really the whole kind of tumah itself is only da'rabanan. This whole concept of tumah yeshana is itself da'rabanan. The Rabbanan did not feel it necessary to impose that kind of tumah on glass kalim. Maybe because it would be sort of a gzera l'gzera. So that's it. So the reason why tumah yeshana, it's true, tumah yeshana in principle should apply to glass, but because tumah yeshana itself is only derabanan, then the chum didn't want to impose it on glass, which itself is only mekabel tumah derabanan. The question is, should tei had miho l'tama? Okay, how about though? We just said another difference between glass and metal is we said metal kalim are mekabel tumah even if they're flat, whereas glass we said is not mekabel tumah if it's flat. So why not? At least we should say that glass should be similar to metal in that sense. Because after all, the fact that flat metal kalim are able to become tameh is daraisa. So there we should say that a rule that originally applies daraisa should be applied to glass, which is the kabbal tumah d'rabbanan. So therefore, we should say so. At least that's fine. Tumah yeshana, you don't want to say so. Tumah yeshana is only daraisa, is only d'rabbanan, but the flatness applies to metal d'oraisa. So if you're telling me that glass is like metal because you're able to melt it and reform it, or you're able to break it, whatever, and reform it, therefore we should say it's like metal, then we should say that flat ones should be mekabel tumah also. Why instead are we making it like wood and bone and the rest of those materials and say that flat ones are not mekabel tumah? The answer is, avdi b'rura bonan hekera, true. But the Chachamim, after all, wanted to make a certain distinction when it comes to glass kalim. They wanted us to be clear on the fact that they are mekabel tumah only drabanan kihecha de lelisra falayot truma v'kodshim, because that way, if truma or kodshim touch a glass kalim that became tumah, we don't want people to burn the truma or the kodshim because of that. We learned yesterday that there are six cases where the Chachamim said because of the Sofek we're going to burn Truma, but ordinarily we don't do that. Ordinarily, when Truma becomes Tomei, when Truma or Kodshim become Tomei from a Truma Drabonon, ordinarily we don't burn it. We only retoile it, as we said, we suspend it. We don't eat it, but we don't burn it either, and we wait to see what develops with it. But in general, that's true of Trumas Derabanan, that we don't burn Truma because of it, because again, Minat Torah, you have a mitzvah to preserve Truma and guard it. So therefore, the Chachamim in general, the Chachamim don't override that and tell us to burn Truma. That's Tomei only with the Truma Derabanan. So over here, because glass is only with Kabbal Truma with Derabanan, the Chachamim wanted us to remember that it's only Derabanan, and therefore they decided to make a distinction between them and metal kalim, namely that metal kalim are going to be Kabbal Truma even if they're flat, whereas glass will not. And that way we'll remember that there is that distinction, that glass is only metamed d'rabanan. Okay. All of that was all based on one answer, which is that basically glass is like clay matzah, it's basically like metal, because you're able to melt it down or break it and reform it. So therefore, we asked in that case that therefore why shouldn't the rule so we said because it's like metal is why if tumah touches the outside of it it becomes tumah because it's like metal in that sense, unlike earthenware which would not. But we said as far as two other dinim that apply to glass, as that applies to metal, the fact that they have Tumah Yashana and the fact that they become Tumah when they're flat, that we said the Chachamim didn't impose those rules on glass. Now we have a difference. Actually, Rav Ashi says, let's go back to our original understanding that glass is considered like clay cheres, not like metal. So you're wondering in that case that it should be like clay. So that explains then, once we say it's like clay cheres, automatically that explains a number of the dinim we said so far. That's why we said you can't dip it in a mikveh because clay cheres you can't. You can't, it doesn't become tumah yashana because that doesn't apply to earthenware. It only applies to metal. It doesn't, it's not metame if it's flat, because clay cheres that are flat don't become tame. The one question we had, or the kokashalach loy l'tamu migabon, so you were wondering in that case then, glass should not be able to become tame if tumah touches it on the outside, if it's like clay cheres. The reason why the Chachamim did not do that, since the inside and the outside are both visible, because glass, after all, is see-through, So therefore, you can't really consider the outside of it to be the outside. In effect, you could say the outside and the inside are the same thing. So therefore, there's no reason. Therefore, the Chacham didn't consider that it would be appropriate to distinguish between the inside and the outside, between the inside and the outside of the cave. So again, as we said before, Tosfos learns that not only that, what we're saying is that they actually count like clay cheres in the sense that they're metame, even if the tumah doesn't touch the actual inside of the kedi, it's just hanging inside it or something. And again, we said the Rambam and the Raya disagree on that, although for different reasons. So that's that. So that's the summary as far as glass kalim. So in short, basically, according to the Mastroner, we're saying that glass is considered like clay cheres. Therefore, for the most part, it has the dinim of clay cheres, with the exception that it's able to become tummy from the outside, unlike clay cheres. And again, according to Rabbi Akiva Eger's chiddush, we would say that if it becomes tummy from the outside, then we would treat it like metal kalim to the extent also where you could tovel it in a mikveh and make it tahor.
But we don't do that.
Well, nowadays we don't have tummy of a tahor anyway, so it's neither here nor there. The only time
nowadays... Al-Pialacha, the Chachamim said you can table them or not?
So we said that the Mishnah in Mikvos that mentioned tobling glass kalim, we said that was only according to the mayor, implying that only if the keli had a hole and then it was plugged up with lead, which implies that if it wasn't plugged up, then even Reb Meir would agree that you can't tovel it, and the Chachamim would say you can't either way. But again, according to Reb Akiva Eger, that was at the initial stage of the Gemara, before we got too far into the discussion, he would say, Lamaskana, that if the kalim becomes tummy from the outside, then you can't make it more stringent than metal kalim and say that it can't go in a mikvah. What the halacha is, I mean, it's, you know, tilchus al mashicha. I mean, it's not a halacha that's relevant nowadays, that's applicable, rather, nowadays. We don't have tumah v'tahara nowadays. When Mashiach comes in the Sanhedrin, we'll have to sit down and decide whether they want to follow Rabbi Akiva Eger's chiddush or not. The only time we have nowadays when we tovel kalim is when we tovel kalim that we buy from a goy, that were manufactured by a goy. There actually we do consider glass like metal. In fact, the same Rav Ashi who says over here that glass is considered like clay cheres for purposes of tumah v'tahara, he actually says over there that glass is considered like metal for purposes of tevilas kalim, and therefore because if you break them you can reform them, and therefore midrash rabbanon you have to tovel glass kalim that you buy that were manufactured by a goy. But as far as tumah v'tahara, it's not applicable nowadays.
So for some aspects, glass kelim are like keli cheres. For some aspects, they're not.
Basically, what we're saying, for the most part, they're like clay cheres. Our Gemara is saying that because the inside is visible, because the inside and the outside are visible together, because it's clear. Therefore, the Chachamim did not want to distinguish between the inside and the outside. Therefore, they made that it can become tamei from the outside. So in that sense, it's like metal, but not, Rav Ashi is saying, because earthenware itself is not because glass is in any way like metal, but rather just because of the fact that it's see-through. And therefore, the Chachamim didn't want to distinguish the inside from the outside. So when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara, in other words, what we're saying is, the Maskana is, we're treating glass almost completely like Kli Cheres, with the exception of this business of it becoming Tumah from the outside. When it comes to tovling dishes that we buy from the Goyim, that's different.
What about black glass?
Kashrus, when the Gemara says glass over here, it means any kind of glass. I guess we would say once the Chachamim made a Sakana of a glass, then they would apply it across the board to all kinds. But if you're saying if it's black, if it's not see-through, it's a good question. I don't know. Maybe it would be considered like clay cheres then. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, I mean, you know, in many places in Shas, we find that they didn't really have, you know, clear, we learned in Brachas, for example, that clear glass was actually a bit of a rarity in those days. Mostly what they had was glass in those days usually was translucent, meaning you could see through it, but not so clearly. It would be like colored glass, like stained glass or something was the more common way they would make glass. You would see through it, but it would have a color, sort of like, you know, you have the metaphor that's brought in thousands of places in Chassidus about how you have light or water, which itself is colorless, but then you put it, you know, you filter it through a colored keli, and it gets the color of that keli in the same way it's used to express the idea of how the Oren Sof becomes the light of Chesed or the light of Gvura or what have you by being filtered through the appropriate keli. So those were the kind of kalim they generally had in those days. Glass kalim would be colored glass. So it would be translucent but not transparent. Okay. Next thing. We said in the Brisa, Shimon ben Shatach tikken ksuba l'isha. We said Shimon ben Shatach made the takana of a ksuba for a woman. So we said that actually here the Gemara doesn't elaborate on it, but it elsewhere the Gemara explains that it's not that he was mistaken the concept of a ksuba. That existed long before him. There's even an opinion that it's Daraisa. He was mistaken the concept that all the husbands in the Chosim are under a lien for the ksuba. You can't just say, for example, I'm designating this particular bundle of money or whatever to pay off the ksuba. Anyway, the gozer tuma of clay matzahs. The other thing we said that Shimon ben Shatach made a gzera of tuma on metal kalim. So you have to figure out what does that mean. Play machas deraisa. The concept that metal kalim are makabel truma is deraisa. B'stiv achas hazav, that's a kosher for gemi. You have in the story over there after the war with Midian in Parshas Matos, Elazar HaKohen comes out and informs the soldiers that the metal kalim that you got over there is spoiled. You have to kasher them and you have to toil them. So we see that metal kalim are makabel truma deraisa. So what did Shimon ben Shatach 1,000 years later add? The answer is loynitzucha elul truma yishan. Yes, but what Shimon ben Shatach added, what we need to be told is that Shimon ben Shatach added the concept of Tumah Yishana. What happened? The Amr of Yehuda Amar Rav, Maisa b'Shel Tzion Hamalka. It happened once with Queen Shel Tzion, who lived in the times of Shimon ben Shatach. She was, in fact, Shimon ben Shatach's sister. Usually, by the way, I mean, Shel Tzion is what the Gemara calls her over here. In other places, there's a few different names that she goes by in various places. Shloim Tzion, or Shloim Tzion, or whatever. Anyway, she was the queen. She had been Yanai Amelech's wife. After Yanai died, she took over and ruled for several years. She ruled, Josephus says she ruled for 9 years. Anyway, so one time, she made a party for her son, the pastor's a wedding party. The nitmu kokeleha, all of the kalim that she was going to use for the party became tummy mess. So now what's going to happen? You have to sprinkle them in part adrama water, which means it's going to take 7 days for them to become tahar. So they didn't want to have to wait. They didn't want to have to push off the wedding because of that. So v'shavartam, so what she did is, she knew the halacha, that if you break kalim, then the tumor goes away. So she had all the kalim broken. Unasanasan l'ksodev, she gave all these metal kalim to a silversmith or a goldsmith or whatever, v'ritchan, and he soldered them together. He put new silver or new gold in there in the places where it was broken. V'asimahem kalim chadashim, and he made new kalim out of them again. So now, good. Now it should be taher, and there shouldn't be a problem, and they should be able to go ahead with the wedding. But the Amru Chachamim, where Shimon ben Shatach at that time was the Nasi, so when we say Shimon ben Shatach made this Zera, we mean he and the Beis Din that he headed made the Takana. No, Yachzur l'Tumas in Yeshana, they go back to their original Tumah. So it doesn't help. You're still going to have to go through. You're still going to have them sprinkled with part Adrama water on the third day and the seventh day.
So was that the wedding continue on? Not so important. The wedding continue on, or that Zera happened after the wedding?
Well, Oh, so you're asking, did they make that takana right then on the spot? It's a good question. I mean, we don't know. So maybe they made that takana that from now on, if this is done, then such kalim will go back to the original truma. But like this, they left well enough alone, or maybe not. We don't really know. Maybe they did. Maybe they did have to postpone the wedding, or maybe they had to get other kalim. We don't know. Okay. Anyway, so for my timer, now why did the Chachamim do that? The reason is Mishum Geder Mechatas Noguba. The reason is because the Chachamim wanted to make a fence around the concept of Mechatas, of Paraduma water. Like this. What's going to happen? Other people are going to start doing the same thing. Other people who have Kalim that become Tameh, metal Kalim in particular, we're saying, are not going to want to wait 7 days to be able to use their metal Kalim again. They're going to do the same thing as Shelfian did. They're going to break them and then have them have them fix. And then people are going to forget all about the concept of using Paraduma water. So therefore, the Chacham didn't want people to do that, and therefore they reimposed the Tumah Yashana. This way you can't play any games. This way you're going to have to wait the 7 days regardless. Okay. The question is, Now, you have within that, you have a machloikas later on. Rashi actually says, I don't know where this machloikas is. Various other Rishonim refer to a Mishnah in Kalim, but whatever. The point is, you have a later machloikas from a time later than Shimon ben Shatach, arguing what cases exactly this takana applies to. Does it? So you have one opinion that says that this does not apply to all other Tumas. It only applies to Tumas Nes. So according to that opinion, exactly that. If these metal Kalim became Tome with Tumas Nes, then you have Tuma Yashana, for the reason that we just said, because otherwise people are going to forget all about Paraduma water. But if, let's say, the Kalim became Tame with a Sheres or a Zog or what have you, then we wouldn't say that. Then if you break them and remake them and fix them, then there wouldn't be an issue. So then Shakir. So then we understand why it is, because the whole purpose was that people don't forget Paraduma water. So there's no reason to apply it to other kinds of Tumas. But if you say there is another opinion that says there that it applies to all kinds of tumors, so then my ikulamema, what are you going to say? Why do we need to, for example, if it became tumor with tumas sheret or tumas zog or what have you, there you don't have to have paraduma water sprinkled on it. So why would we say that it goes back to tumor yeshana? Abaya says, according to that opinion, the reason is, because what happens is, it's true that if you break a keli, and one way of breaking a keli is to make a hole in it of a certain minimum size, but the Chachamim found it necessary to make a zera because you might not make the hole big enough. In order to make that the keli is not makabel tuma anymore, you would have to make a hole big enough for pomegranate to fall out of it. And not everybody is expert on the halacha. Not everybody is going to realize that you need such a big hole. So what are they going to end up doing? They're going to end up making a hole smaller than that. So it's not going to actually take away the truma. They're going to mistakenly think it does, and then you're going to have truma around. So therefore, according to that opinion, the Chachamim found it necessary to make this gzera for any kind of truma. Rava says a different reason. Gzera, shemayon, retvila bas yoyma oylala. Rava says there's a different reason. It's true when it comes to other kinds of tumas, obviously you don't need paraduma water. On the other hand, you also have, we know that with any kind of tuma, when a keli or a person becomes tame, they one of the things they need, besides that they need to dip in a mikra, is they need to also have a head of shemesh. They also need to have that they wait until nightfall, and only then do they become completely tahor. Up until that point, they're tevul yoyim. So therefore, Rava says the reason why the Chachamim said this matter of Tuma Yashana is because otherwise people are going to think that Tevila on the same day is effective without head of Shemesh. What's going to happen? In other words, you're going to have somebody had a metal keli, it became Tame, let's say with a Sheret, so they broke it, then they fixed it. People see them using the keli that same day. People are not going to realize that he broke it and remade it. People are going to think, oh, okay, he took it to the mikveh, and that's it. Then right away, after you've dipped it in the mikveh, you can right away use it, and they're not going to realize that you need head of shemesh. So therefore, the Chachamim found it necessary to make Tumah Yashana. This way, either way, you're going to need to tovel it. Once you tovel it, you're going to need head of shemesh, and that's that, and there won't be any confusion. So the Gemara asks, my benayu? Okay, we have two reasons. We have a buyer's reason about the hole might not be big enough. We have Rava's reason because people might not realize that you need a head of Shemesh. My benayu, what's the practical difference between their two opinions? The answer is, it's a benayu zirat sfinu mirsa. What happens if he broke the kalim completely? Nirtzef literally means like he flattened them. So Rashi explains two ways. The first way Rashi explains is that now Abaya's reason doesn't apply. The fact that he completely flattened them or completely broke them, obviously he made holes big enough in order to make it that it's not a kalim anymore. So that wouldn't be an issue. But you still have the issue that people aren't going to realize you need head of Shemesh. Then Rashi says a second explanation, which he prefers, is the other way around. If you flatten the kalim completely, you still have a bias problem because maybe the hole wasn't big enough. On the other hand, you don't have Rava's problem because then it'll be very obvious. It looks like a completely new kalim. Nobody's going to think that you just totaled it and didn't have head of Shemesh because people as it looks to people like a completely new kalim. So whatever it is, that would so one or the other of those explanations, and most of the Rishonim accept Rashi's second explanation. The Rambam actually doesn't really make that distinction when it comes to these halachas and Hilchos Kalim. The Rambam just says generically that a metal keli goes back to Tumah Yashana without differentiating how much you broke the keli. So it could be that Rambam might say, because after all, we have these two different ways of understanding the difference between Abaya and Rava, and according to one, it comes out that one, that flattening is better, and according to the other one, that's not. So either way, that Rambam just asks that Tumah Yashana applies to metal kalim regardless. Now, it only applies to metal kalim. It does not, the Chachamim did not find it necessary to apply it to other kinds of kalim. So we said, when it comes to the other six kinds of kalim that are able to become tamei on a daraisa level, wood and bone, and then sack and so forth, the reason is because if you break them, it's very hard to make them back into any kind of functional kalim. You break a wooden kalim, for example, it's not really that easy to take the pieces and make them back into a functional kalim, and therefore the Chacham didn't find it necessary to make a zera on that because somebody might do it and then might think that you don't need tarad or water, etc. And when it comes to glass, we said even though glass can be melted and reformed, but since glass itself is only the Kabbal Troman, it's at Abbanon level, therefore the Chacham didn't want to impose this din at Abbanon on it.
So the flattening applies to what applied to the glass keli also?
No. So that what we're saying is, if a person has a glass keli that became tamei and they broke it and then they reformed the glass out of the broken pieces, let's say they melted it down again and then made a new glass keli out of it, or they fixed it or whatever, then Tumah Yashana wouldn't apply. Then we would say that from now on it's the Kabbal Tumah, but not if the old Tumah doesn't come back. Only metal keli do we say that.
And earthenware also, it wouldn't apply.
It doesn't. That's what I'm saying. Out of the various kinds of kalim, the seven kinds of kalim that are mechabel truman at daraisa level, and the one glass that's mechabel truman at the rabbanon level, out of all those eight, the concept of tumah yashana applies only to metal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now we're finished with the Gemara has a digression that started on Yudalot Amud Beis. Two blocks ago, we had quoted over there Brisa, again, we quoted over there Brisa that Yosi ben Yezer and Yosi ben Yechanan and Shimon ben Shotach and Hillel and Shammai, and we spent the last two dafim analyzing analyzing those various takanos that we mentioned in that Brisa. Now we have to get back to the Yud Ches Dover. Again, we said in our Mishnah that the Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai gathered together in the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiv and Goren's house, where he was busy over there working on reconciling the Pesukim in Sefer Yechezkel. And meanwhile, while they were there, they voted on 18 halachas, and he said that Beit Shammai outnumbered Beit Hillel, and they voted and decided on the 18 halachas, the Yud Ches Dover, we're calling them. We went through half of them so far, because we started on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. We quoted a Mishnah from Masechta Zavim that listed 9 of them. Actually, it listed 10, but one of them was Tzvul Yom, which is Daraisa. So we had 9 of them so far. Now we have to start discussing what are the other 9. The Idach Maihi. What's the next one of the Yud Ches Dover, the 18 Zeres? So like this, the Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah in the close. Hamaniach Kalim Tachas Atziner, the Kabbal Behen Megshamim. If a person leaves Kalim under a drain pipe to catch rainwater in them. Now, the question basically is going to be, is the water that lands in those kalim, is it going to be considered mayim shu'uvim? Is it going to be considered drawn water such that, as we learned yesterday, if three lugim of it fall into a mikveh that doesn't have 40 saw, it's going to pasala. That's the subject. That's the subject that we're going to talk about over here. Is the now the rule is, in other words, not all water in kalim is considered is automatically considered mayim shu'uvim. You have in certain cases when water lands in a keli, if you pick up the keli, then it's considered mayim shu'uvim. But if, let's say, for example, you just break a keli right where it is, then in certain cases that water is not considered mayim shu'uvim and does not pass the limitza. So now the question is, in this case over here, you put kalim under a drain pipe in order to catch rainwater that flows down the drain pipe. By the way, Rashi points out the drain pipe itself has to be of a shape where it itself is not going to pass all the water. You have to have that it itself is either a completely pass-through pipe, so no water stays in it, or you could even have, sometimes you have like a small area in it that's meant to hold water. For example, you have a little depression in it that's meant that if there's any rocks or dirt or whatever in the water, it'll settle out into that depression. But you have something called kvoy or the seif chakokoy, where first you put the pipe in place and then you made that, then you carved out that area in it where it's still not considered a cave, but it was attached to the ground first. Anyway, so the pipe itself is not considered a keli to make the water shorim. The only question is when the water lands in the keli that's sitting underneath the pipe. So the Mishnah says, echad kelim gdolim v'echad kelim ktanim, whether it's a large keli or whether it's a small keli. You might think maybe a small keli, Rashi says, is not considered important. Tosafot says you might think a large keli is maybe large enough that it's not a kabel tumah. Nevertheless, and vafilu kleavonim, even if they are stone kalim, which are not makabel tuma at all, or uklei adama, or kalim made out of earth, which is earth that was not fired in a kiln. So if it's fired, then it becomes klei cheres, or klei nester, as we said before. But you also have, sometimes you can have kalim that are made out of raw earth, raw clay or whatever, that was not fired. Those are not makabel tuma. Or clay glolim, or if you put over there, kalim made out of glolim. Now, glolim, there's two possibilities what glolim means. In most other places in Shas, Rashi explains that glolim means animal dung. Animal dung. So if you make kalim out of that, then again, such kalim are not makabel tuma. Over here, instead, Rashi uses a different explanation that glolim means shayish, which means marble. And a number of Meforshim asked on Rashi that in that case that should be the same as Klei Avonim. Why is it listed separately? There's an interesting line that the Nitziv says on it. He says that when Rashi says over here the word Shayish, he doesn't mean the Hebrew word Shayish, which means marble. Rather, he's referring to a word in some Goyish language, in French or German or whatever, that means excrement, that means dung. And in fact, you have a word in German, Scheiße, which is somewhat similar to an English word for the same thing, that means dung. So it could be that that's what Rashi meant. In any case, the point is, such kalim are not makabel tuma. So even those things, postanus hamikva, all those kinds of things, if you put them under the drain pipe, then the water that collects in them will pass to the mikveh if three lugim of it fall into the mikveh. Even though the keli itself is not makabel tuma, the fact that you put it under the drain pipe means that the water in it is considered mayim shu'uvim. Now, so the point is, continues the Mishnah, Echad HaManiach VeEchad HaShecheach Divei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says that applies whether he deliberately placed the kalim over there or whether he forgot them there. Now, you can have, let's say, a person put down kalim, not paying attention that it was under the drain pipe. He forgot that, or let's say he did know it was under the drain pipe, but later on he forgot that they were there. So Beit Hillel would say, so Beit Shammai says it doesn't matter. Or Beit Hillel Matarim VeShecheach. Beit Hillel says that if you forgot the kalim over there, then the water in them is not considered mayim shorim. So,
in other words, you need kavana.
Because you need kavana, right. Omer of Meir, nimnu v'rabu Beit Shammai abesilol. So the mayor says that Beit Shammai outvoted Beit Hillel, and therefore the halacha became that it doesn't matter, even if you forgot them. So according to the mayor, then that would be one of the yud ches davar. We'll see soon, according to a different opinion, what there is. Continues the Mishnah, Umodim Beit Shammai b'shecheach b'chotzer shehu tahor. Now Beit Shammai will agree that if it wasn't under a drain pipe, if a person forgot these kalim just out in the middle of the chotzer, where there it's not necessarily likely that water is going to fall into it unless it starts raining, Then Beit Shammai agrees, Shehu Tahar, that the water in those kelim is Tahar. So therefore, again, if he were to pick up the kelim once they're full, then they become, then it becomes Mayim Shurim anyway. But if he were to, let's say you had a mikveh right there, right next to where the kelim were, and he would have just break the kelim right there and the water flows into the mikveh, then Beit Shammai would agree that it's not, that it doesn't pass for the mikveh.
If he forgot.
Put it out in the chaser, not under a drain pipe, but out in the chaser.
So the drain pipe, according to the Shammai, is like a kavana, basically.
That's the point. Just the fact that you put it under the drain pipe, although the Gemara is going to say in a second, we're going to see that even according to the Shammai, not always. So wait. But first, let's finish with the Mishnah. Omer Rav Yosi, Adayin Machlokas B'Mkoy Ma'imetz. Rav Yosi says the Machlokas is still in place. Rashi explains that what Rav Yosi means is not like you, Rav Meir, are saying that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel ended up agreeing because Beit Shammai outvoted Beit Hillel and agreed, and everybody ended up agreeing that the water passes the mikveh if you put it under the drain pipe, even if you forgot them there. Rav Yosi is saying the machlokas is still in place, meaning, in other words, that they still continue to argue about it. The Rambam has a different understanding of what Rav Yosi means, which is we're not talking about the kelim under the drain pipe. Yes, everybody agrees on. Rav Yosi is saying that this that you're saying later on in the Mishnah, that Beit Shammai would agree that if it was in the chaser, that the water doesn't pass over the mikveh, Rav Yosi would say no, Beit Shammai disagrees in that case also. Okay. Amar Mishashia. Dvei Rav Ami. So Mishashia says, to explain the machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about the drain pipe, they said it in the yeshiva as follows. Hakol modim, everybody will agree, that if he put down the kelim under the drain pipe, when it's cloudy, then for sure the water in them is tame, meaning that it passes the mikveh. Even Beit Hillel will agree to that, even if afterwards he forgot, because the fact that he put them there to begin with when it was cloudy shows that he wanted the water to be caught in them. The fact that later on he forgot the kelim are there, even according to Beit Hillel, is not going to make a difference. If he put them there when there's no clouds in the sky, when the clouds are scattered, divrei hakol tahorim. Then even Beit Shammai will agree that the water in them is tahor and does not pass the mitzvah because he put them under the drain pipe. So what? There were no clouds in the sky. It wasn't like any time soon it was going to be raining. The fact that he put the water, the fact that he put the kelim over there doesn't make a difference. Loy nechlechu, what is the machlokas? Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, elo shehinichem b'shas kishru ovim. The machlokas would be, if you put down the kelim over there when it was cloudy, v'nispazru, then the clouds cleared up, v'chozru, v'niskashru, and then it became cloudy again. And in between, he forgot that the kelim were there. So now the machlokas is, mar sava bota machshavte, or mar sava le bota machshavte. So now, Beit Hillel is going to say, the fact that the clouds scattered means he figured in that case it's not going to rain anymore. If he figures it's not going to rain anymore, then that means that so now his original maisa that he did became bustle. Therefore, the water that later on collects in these kelim, when it does after all rain, doesn't matter, says Beit Hillel. It's not really a matter. I mean, the Gemara is using the word tuma and tara over here. Really, instead of tuma and tara, you have to think, passels the mikveh or doesn't passel the mikveh. If we say that the water in there is still, it got in there b'daita, because he originally put it under the drain pipe intending to collect water in it. And therefore, even the fact that the cloud scattered doesn't matter, and you're still able to, and the water still passes a mikveh. Whereas according to Beit Hillel, we would say once the clouds scattered, then already he was Masiach Das, he figured it's not going to rain anymore, and therefore, if it does end up getting cloudy again and raining, then we say that his original Maisa goes away. Okay, so that's the Machlokas Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. According to the mayor, it ended up that Beit Shammai outvoted Beit Hillel and decided that the water in those kelim does in fact pass over the mitzvah. So the question is, a little Yosi, John, Machlokas, Adayim, and Koma, and Medes. Okay, what are we going to do according to the Yosi, though? He says that the Machlokas still exists. He's saying that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel never ended up voting on this, and Beit Shammai still continued to argue with Beit Hillel on it. So according to him, Batri Lahu, so according to him, you're missing one of the 18 things. because the 18 gzeirot are all things where this Hillel was outvoted by the Shammai, and the halacha is like the Shammai. According to Rav Yossi, this isn't one of them, because according to him, you still continue to have a machlokes, and the usual rule applies that the halacha is like the Hillel. Amr of Nachum Yitzchok, said Rav Nachum Yitzchok answers, you're right, according to Rav Yossi, we have to put in a different one. Af b'nois kusim nides me'ari sosan b'y b'yem gozru. Rav Yossi would say that another one of the 18 gzeiros is the concept that, which we learned in Masechta Nida, that as soon as a kusi girl is born, we immediately consider her to be a nida. We said, we learned over there, the reason is because conceivably you could have that a girl, even on the day she's born, could have a re'iyah that would make her a nida. It's, of course, a very rare thing, but it does happen. It would actually make her a nida on a daraisa level, even though it's the day she was born. The kusim don't hold of that concept. Therefore, the Chachamim imposed and said that all kusi girls are all considered nidahs from the day they're born, as far as the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. Because the kusim don't hold of this concept that a girl on the day she's born could become a nidah, therefore, conceivably, you could have some kusi girl out there who did become nidah on the day she was born, or very shortly afterwards, and they never dipped her in a mikveh because they didn't hold she's tamei, but in fact she is tamei. So therefore the chachamim made that gzeira. Tosfos actually discusses over here at some length different possibilities about that, because that whole concept only applies according to the mayor, because the mayor is concerned about a miut and the other chachamim are not. So Tosfos discusses over here that the gzeira actually might have been not so much because the chachamim are concerned about this miut of the very small minority of girls that become nida on the day they're born, but more because the Chachamim wanted to keep a distance between the Jews and the Kosim. Given that the Kosim are semi-gerim, there was a real concern. There might be intermarriage or whatever, and therefore the Chachamim found it necessary to make this gzeira. So the mayor would say that you additionally have the point that they might actually be nidus, even on a daraisa level. The Chachamim say it's not so much because there's the problem of being nidus on a daraisa level. It's more just that we want to keep the regular Jews away from the kusim as much as possible. But in any case, we're saying, according to Rav Yossi, that would be one of the gzeiros that was made on that day as part of the 18 gzeiros. Okay. So far we're up to 10. So far we have another 8 to discuss, which we'll continue tomorrow, as the shaman continue discussing the remainder of the 18 years.
Shkoyach. Shkoyach, everyone.